When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How are you?
Yo.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good, man. You hear me all right?
I can hear you fine. You hear me?
Cool. I'm using my Yeti microphone, so.
Oh, awesome.
All right.
I'm just doing it old school style on right on the iPhone. Well, I'm just going to jump right in while we have a good connection so we can hear each other and everything looks cool. So, everybody, welcome to The Tint. I'm your host, Scott Feldman, and today we have a very special guest, Mark Chen. Those of you that are on Instagram, know him as TMK. It's TMK Aquascape, all right?
Or is it TMK Aquarius?
Aquarius. And you're owner or co-owner of Nature Design Studio. You've seen his amazing work, and we're going to talk about a couple of those tanks because I've got a lot of questions, and I know our listeners do too. Give us a little background on yourself, Mark. How long you been in the hobby? When did you start Nature Design Studio? What were your influences? All that stuff. Go.
Great. Yeah. Thanks for inviting me, first of all. My name is Mark Chen. I go by TMK Aquarius, and on my social media platforms. I started the hobby when I was 19 or 18. So wow, it's been like 20 years. And you know, I first got into the monster fish keeping, and then you know that requires like bigger and bigger tanks, right? And then
yeah,
I quickly got into like Central American cichlids, which are like these like, you know, huge cichlids.
Right.
They get to like, I don't know, over a foot sometimes. And then so that grew quickly, and then which made me want big tanks, right? So
right, I don't think I've ever seen a small tank of yours, right? I mean, I don't think you do really small tanks that much, do you?
Yeah, I don't really do small tanks.
Yeah.
I'll get into the reason why later, but
sure, absolutely.
Yeah. So after I had these, this was back in 2008 or 2009 when there's a type of fish that I really love. They're called red tear or Mesohiro festes. They're like a Central and South American cichlid. Really pretty. The female especially, right? Like when they get fired up, their color is like just unmatched by any freshwater fish. You know, even discus. So I'm like super enamored with those fish. And back then it was fairly difficult to find a pair of like really perfect specimens, but I managed to get a pair somehow, right, through like just a lot of searching and whatnot. But then due to my inexperience with dealing with disease and whatnot, because these are these were wild caught fish, and like, you know, I lost them. I lost both both pair, and then I just got crushed basically.
Yeah.
So from that experience, I just quit the hobby for a good 5 to 6 years, I want to say.
Oh wow. Oh
yeah, like entirely time. Like just no tanks whatsoever until I want to say like 2015 ish that like just by chance I walk into a Petco of all places, and then I saw these really great fancy betas they were having. And then I've always seen these betas in like just, you know, in photos and stuff,
right?
But I've never saw them in person until, you know, that trip to Petco, and immediately they just kind of like drew my attention, and I got two of them on impulse.
Nice.
Right after I got home, I actually converted like a, you know, those car models, like the die cast car model that have like a acrylic casing over it.
Oh right.
Yeah,
right.
So I just flipped that upside down to
be
like one of the little desktop for a tank for one of the betas. And then Yeah, like so.
That's beta's... a sign of a true aquarist, right there. By the way, that's a sign of a true aquarist. You'll use whatever container holds water to do fish. I love that. That's totally me.
Yeah, I mean, like that. It actually looked really, really good too, as a tank. I think because mm-hmm. you know it's very clear.
It has clean seams and everything. Yeah, exactly.
Super clean. Yeah, so that's actually what got me back into the hobby, and then when I got back into the hobby this time around, like you know, the bug basically just bit me 100 times harder than even you know my first time around, mm-hmm. and then it was. Like it escalated even quicker, right? From the betas, I quickly got some, you know, 65s, and then that grew to like 120s, 150s. So before I know it, like a couple months in, I'm already working on, you know, like my fourth and fifth tanks. Yeah, like and got back into like, you know, the red tears right away. And then
I was gonna say, so you did get a pair. Okay,
So you know, after this time around, you know, they became much more widely available, mm-hmm. and then plus, you know, just with the internet access, and everything, a lot more people are breeding them, so yeah, they were plenty and like very much easier to find. And then it was around the time where I was doing a remodeling of my house. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, yeah, I'm going to go like super big with this. And I'm going to do like a giant tank. Right. So nice. That was like when I was looking for like big tanks. And while this was going on, I started, you know, my page on Instagram. The TMK mm-hmm. Aquarius page on Instagram, just you know, showing my betas and like you know, whenever I'm doing like a new setup, I'm just like always documenting it and everything,
right?
And then, yeah, like back in the days, that was 2015. There weren't that many aquarium contents on Instagram,
there really weren't.
Yeah,
really
I remember
just
like
starting.
Yeah, I remember Oliver Knott only had maybe
yeah,
not even like 10,000 followers.
Yeah, it was like the wild.
It was the heyday, and then
yeah,
yeah. Like I started with a couple of people who were all you know, pretty much starting, and then so now like if there's for the ones who are still doing it, they're all mm-hmm. pretty much in the 200k, 300k range. So yeah, if you just stuck with it, you know, like you just
get those followers up.
Yeah, and then and also it's like a testament of your passion for it, right? Because if you can be doing exactly. this consistently for that long, that means you're super passionate about it. And then if you have that much passion for something, you're gonna do well. Like you're gonna be extraordinary in what you do.
Sorry to interrupt. I had a question on this point because. I mean, when I see your stuff, again, our listeners are probably familiar with you by your Instagram handle, and they'll undoubtedly go and check out your account. I could look at your tanks and your posts because I follow them, and I could tell it's your tank. You have your own style. And I was about to ask you, were you – I know you've had some to do with Nature Aquarium style. You've had some background in that. Your partner was an IAPLC competitor, all that kind of stuff. Do you feel like you were – I don't want to say trained or mentored by somebody, or is this just like kind of your natural style that you found and it just works for you? Like, how does that, what do you attribute your style to?
Yeah, that, I'm actually happy to hear that you say it's a distinct style of my own.
Oh, it is.
And, I've actually, you know, like several people have mentioned that to me, in the past, like for example, Joey, mm-hmm. King of DIY. So,
who's butt you're gonna kick in that aquascaping skill box? Pretty confident.
I'm
pretty confident that's a win.
to come to LA, which I look very cool. So much forward to it because he's been a really great friend throughout the years, and like mm-hmm. I've been trying to get him out here forever. And
finally, that's cool.
Yeah, we have a chance, but you know it's all for fun. But
yeah.
Anyway, so. That style really extends from, I guess, my own take on the fusion of biotope and nature while being a home aquaria.
Like art, so, like kind of art as well, right?
Yeah, because
the ability as well.
To me, for example, I heard your podcast talking about, you know, biotope style, right? Like the very strict and rigorous
almost too
rules,
strict,
right? To basically restrict, like, you know, like you have to get all the species right and everything,
right?
Which is fine when
it's cool, right?
Yeah, when you want to do it, but then is it practical to do it? Probably not. But is it the most beautiful thing that you can make? Definitely not. You know why? Because you can only capture so much of that little corner of that biotope, or, you know, that river, right? Or
exactly
whatever underwater scene. And like any nature you can visit, right? As if you only take, let's say, 2 feet wide or 3 feet wide, dissection of that nature setting, right? It doesn't look pretty.
You're right.
Just take that one little part of it, it's not pretty and it's not like really aesthetically appealing, right? But only when you look at the thing, like the whole picture, 360, right? The entire, let's say, the riverbank or the mountain, wherever you go, you look at the entire thing and you get the full breadth of its beauty. And then if you're just trying to capture like that one little segment, usually unless you do it like in a diorama style, to kind of like, you know, encapsulate the entirety of it, then a lot of it is not, it doesn't translate. It just doesn't translate.
I love your position on that. And I don't think I've ever had anybody tell me that. And I've talked to a lot of the big names, you know, George Farmer, Jeff Sensky, people like that. And no one's ever mentioned what you just said about you can only encapsulate if you're modeling just a small part of it. I think that's very interesting because that's sort of the justification for doing some artistic interpretation of it. And you do it really well. Like, again, when I said I could tell your style from just about anybody's, because your use of scale is really interesting. I know you work in larger tanks primarily, but
the
way you do your rock, it's not like you're trying to do a certain style. You're trying to achieve a certain look. And I love that. You're not up to one style, right? I mean, I believe you could probably do an Iwagumi. You could probably do some of those diorama things, but your jam is to just, you have a vision and it seems like you execute it to meet your vision. Am I correct in interpreting it
absolutely
that way?
Absolutely. Yeah. You're 100% correct. And
yeah,
I usually start with, okay. So to me, aquarium is not something, only exists in photograph. It's an actual physical space that occupies your home or office. Like, you are supposed to enjoy it and observe it and see every little detail in 3D, right? Up close, stepping far away, staring at it from an angle. So that's why I don't usually do one-sided viewing tanks, just for that reason, because you can walk around a lot of peninsula tanks, right? I have, like, you know, room divider tanks, and then like what I really love is cylinders. So I've done a cylinder tank. Yeah, like I used to hate it, but then after I did my which is a tank that I called the Ancient Growth. So that one is a cylinder, which I've just recently posted like a reel about it, but then I'll send you some pictures of it. So,
yeah, I'd like to see that because I think people would love to see how you do a cylinder.
Oh, it's very difficult because, I mean, like, you have to worry about, like, all angles, right?
Yeah.
But then the thing is, the type of aquascaping that you could do with the cylinder is so intriguing because there's so much creativity that you can do, and, like, almost and in a continuous way, that you can create all these pockets and all these crevices for fish to interact with. And then you just go in and out, you know, like plecos will just have a blast. And then you have like quarries coming out from like the roots and going to another. You have you know, like small schooling fish that swim through these, just like how they would do it in nature. So like that swimming pattern, like all of a sudden just changed a lot.
You know, then, you're right, because they can swim continuously. It's a little different. You've also used a fish. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm excited because you're
Yeah, for sure.
You use a fish that I like. You use knife fish in your displays. I've seen you do that. Not too many people do that. I love that you use those fish because you have the size and scale, and they're really interesting the way they interact with the
Oh, they're so interesting. They're super interesting. They're like very underrated fish to be
sure. Oh, yeah.
And the only thing is, like, I don't have a lot of success keeping them just because
they're tough to feed. Yeah. They're tough to
feed. And then especially I had the knives with my discus. And then I'm basically really trying hard not to feed them live, live food. And then, you know, the knives won't go for pallets. So
it's
like a little, but then like I would definitely encourage people to do like a species specific tank for knives. Mm-hmm. And then you can do some cool escaping for a knife if like you're doing a species specific tank, for sure. And another thing I think with me is that I hate seeing anything man-made inside my tanks.
I would go
like super far to, and even just like giving myself a lot of hard time to try to hide everything, like, you know, whether it be heater filtration outlets or like anything. There's, if you see my tank, there's nothing that would be like equipment wise or like
memory. I love that.
Right. One of the recent work that I did is called the Mirage, which is like the floating tank, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that one, the client's his vision and his really high standard just basically required that exact philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there were some aquarium design company that came before me to try to work on the project, but then they kind of just thought, you know, this guy's a little too hard to please. And then that's how I got the job.
Basically. You're like, oh, that's right up my alley.
And then, yeah. And then I'm like, dude, like, I love that. Right.
That's exactly
what I'm trying to do. And I really love that he appreciates that. And then he demands that. So yeah, it was like a right fit. But then after I posted, I like the most questions I have for that tank is, where are the filtrations, or like, do you even have
any, right? Yeah. And I was going to say, let's go to the practical real fast. Like, what are your top ways of hiding stuff like that?
Yeah. So I definitely do like almost all my tanks, unless they're very temporary, that I know it's temporary, then I'll do hard plumbing. So mm-hmm. I'll drill through the tank's bottom, and then whether I use a canister or a sump, I'll always do like a hard plumb, right? To mm-hmm. drill through.
Do you do a surface overflow or do you?
Yeah, so for some, I do. Yeah, for some, I'll use like a overflow box.
Mm-hmm.
To, you know, take care of the surface skimming and agitation. And then for some, I rely on like a external, not an external, but like a what is it, skimmer, like a
surface skimmer. A surface skimmer.
For example, like a Oaza skimmer or whatever. Right. And then, gotcha. But then I just find a place to hide it. And then, or I build like a hardscape to hide it.
Got it. Do you use a lot of off the shelf tanks, or are most of yours custom for your
My clients?
Yeah.
Tank, I do almost exclusively custom tanks.
Because you're trying to fit the space.
There's like a, you know, specific space and height, like dimension, right, that they require. But then mm-hmm. For some of my own tanks, for example, in my studio, because I'm a great friend with UMS, and then they do a lot of support for me. So yeah, I use their tanks a lot.
They make fantastic aquariums. You know, that's the other question I wanted to ask you about your tanks. It sort of, you gave me a little segue here, and we can get back to the subject. But your tank called the Grotto, probably my favorite tank on Instagram right now, freshwater or otherwise, just because you know what I love about it is, like, you expressed a goal of, you wanted to do it a certain way for a certain fish that you love, and you just pulled it off beautifully. And it just, it looks, it's exactly what is perfect for that tank, that peninsula look. I encourage everybody to go check out Mark's Instagram page to check that out. Yeah. And I love that tank, that style right there. When I see that, I'm like, there's no one else. Maybe Jeff Senske or Mike Senske might do something similar, but it's so distinctive. When I see it, I'm like, oh, that's definitely your tank. I love your use of wood. Do you have a particular type or shape of wood that you prefer to use, like one piece of wood, several pieces? And I have to ask you this because it drives me crazy, but do you glue wood together, or you just fit it by gravity or whatever? I'm curious.
Okay, so the type of wood that I use are usually, because I'm in California, so I can just go.
Right. We're both in SoCal.
And they're just so readily available. And I mean, like, their characteristic is just so great and distinct. Oh, yeah. So easy to work with, right? And then I use them a lot. But then there's also spider wood that I use. Mm-hmm. They're a little harder to use. But, you know, it all depends on what you're trying to achieve, right? So, for example, like the big wood piece that comes out of the water. So mm-hmm. that one is actually a spider wood.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it's just a different part of it. You know what I mean? Like, because usually it's the root.
Right.
Like spider wood, you're using the roots a lot.
It's azalea, then, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, but then that one is more like on the branch side. Mm-hmm. So, it really depends. I don't have like a type of wood that like I must use or whatever.
An absolute go-to.
Yeah. So, because I believe I've used the pine branch. In my river, like the river. So there's a tank that's like 450 gallons. That's called the river. And that's the big tank that I was talking about when I was, you know, telling the story of I was thinking of going big when I was doing my home renovation. So that was actually my very first planted tank. Yeah, like very first planted tank. I've never
went big on your first planted tank. I mean, that's a big tank for your first planted tank.
Don't do it.
That's crazy.
Like, yeah, for the listeners out ballsy. There, don't do it. it was naive. Like, that's what it is.
Sometimes naivety leads you to brilliance, though.
Yeah, that was just a dumb move. I paid for it dearly. Not with money.
A lot going on in a big tank.
Like, yeah, so much effort put into that tank.
Oh, yeah.
It took me a year and a half to build that tank.
Oh yeah, I believe it.
So that, for that one, because I just stepped into the world of aquascaping, right? Because before I was into just monster fish before,
right? Just the big fish.
I dabbled with, you know, just putting driftwoods. Like, I've always been fascinated by you know, decorating your tank a certain way, and then like incorporating nature elements into you know, the aquarium and everything. But then just I just never got to kind of like experimenting and whatnot until this big tank, pretty much. And then I had a vision of, okay, like how I wanted to look and everything. But then trying to collect all the materials for hardscape and everything was a challenge, because 2015, I didn't know, you know, UMS, I didn't know Boost Plant yet.
Right.
And then, for listeners, they're like, that's my store.
Yeah, give a shout out. We'll give a shout out. Boost Plant.
Yeah. Plug for them right there. Yeah.
Yeah. In SoCal. I mean, they've been great to my projects too. And Ultimate Tanks are fantastic. I have to just interject one more time though on something that I love. You said, you think about the fish that you want to work. Your theme is based on the fish. I love that. That's, again, something that a lot of aquascapers, I think, have the idea, and then the fish comes secondary. You're like, I want to build it around the fish. That's cool. I like
right, that. Exactly. I feel like you kind of have to, because every fish demand like a different type of setting. Like you're not gonna,
oh yeah.
right? You're not gonna like the thing. Like that's my pet peeve is I can't stand seeing African cichlids in a planted tank. I just like, I'm like,
it makes no
that's
sense.
So wrong. Like it's
yeah, it is wrong.
It's just like, come on. Like you, if you have like hell? Even some, you know, basic knowledge of like the fish, about the fish and where it's from and like, you know, its surroundings and everything, you
right.
don't use the reef lake cichlids, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
well,
like,
people like the colors, they're taken there. By the colors and they want to have, but they want the plants and all that stuff, right? And like, oh no,
yeah, work. It's probably not wrong or anything like that. No. Right? It's just like in my like for
it's
me it's almost like an insult on my visual sense.
Right.
But then, or like, you know, because I just know those fish don't belong there. So that's why.
Right.
But you know, like there's nothing wrong, obviously. So
no, but that's the artist. The aquarist in you says, ugh, the artist in you is like, yeah. Okay, we could probably make it work.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. But then yeah, like you want the fish to really interact with something that you create, like the environment mm-hmm. that you create. And
oh,
you want
all the
to
points.
See like that behavioral, right? Like in, because
yeah.
when you mentioned the grotto, so I had the idea of doing wild discus, right, for the grotto.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
And then, yeah, so initially, I was thinking I wanted to put a lot more hardscape materials in the grotto to, you know, make the fish feel like they're,
right. They're similar to their environment.
And, yeah, yeah, like, you know, easy to retrieve into like a refuge and whatnot. But then here's the design part that interfered with, you know, that Aquarius side of things, because my wife wants the tank to be very simple and
like open, kind of
reserve as much visibility through the tank as I can.
That so, makes sense. But you know, yeah. you did hit that though, because you have some of the elements that discus encounter in their natural habitat, the overhanging wood branches, for example, but you kept this negative space that just draws you in. That's what I love so much about that tank. Again,
for our listeners,
please do check out Mark's Instagram, because I want you to see that tank and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
You know, the funny thing with this tank,
really inspiring.
Right? Because you see a lot of great tanks, great design out there. And then not all the great design. Usually the great designs don't hit virality, right? On social
yeah.
media. Like they're like, you know, for people who are in the know and then who have the level of understanding to appreciate. And then, you know, like, for example, like I'll look at like, for a really mass, like a masterpiece of escaping. And then I'll be like, wow, that's crazy. And then like, I'll
right.
appreciate it. But then for like a, maybe like a beginner or like someone who's not even in the hobby, they'll be like, okay, so like you got to explain to me why it's so great.
Why do you like
it so much, right? So
right.
it doesn't hit that virality.
Yeah, try working with the kind of tanks that I love.
Taste,
yeah, no, you're like, what
right?
the hell?
Right, exactly. Like, you
perfect.
Do a plague water tank and nobody, like, you know,
right. no one gives
a not care for it. It's like,
no,
oh,
of
dude,
course not.
Your water's brown.
But of then, course not. Yours is so relatable in so many ways.
Well, yeah, see, that's the thing. Like, I understood that. And then I'm like, all right, so the gray one, like, you know, pieces probably don't hit virality. So I was shocked to learn that like the grotto actually was viral. It's like it was a viral sensation. And then I'm like, oh shoot, did I not do a good enough job to, to like have this
no,
thing be viral?
Know,
and that
you know what, no, but you know what it is about that tank is it does it almost effortlessly, because again, you didn't pander to the masses on that one. You were just like, hey, I want to do a tank that makes me happy and makes my fish happy. And it just so happened to look freaking awesome too. And it just works, and it's super relatable. And a lot of people look at that and they're like, man, I'd love to have something like that in my home, you know, just like what you did. That's the beauty of a tank like that.
Thank you. Yeah. So a lot of people have been telling me they really appreciate the simplicity of the scape.
Mm-hmm.
But then to me, I'm like, yes, like I definitely kept it, you know, like I kept a huge amount of negative space within the composition. But then to me, there's like nothing simple about that scape. Like that no. was yeah well
no it's a lot of work goes into that. Yeah.
Scape that I've worked on, just because, you know, like I had to, that was the first tank I experimented with the you know slate stone, the way how adhered it to like both sides and like covering the overflow box, let's say. And then
what did you use to stick it to the side? Was it like a silicone? Oh really?
Yeah,
oh,
just silicone.
Oh, that worked cool.
And but you basically I for the really heavy pieces, because I had, you know, slate stone that are like 36 inches tall, and then maybe like,
oh, those must have been heavy.
Yeah, like 2 feet wide. So damn. Very, very heavy pieces, but then they're perfectly flat, right? And then
yeah.
I basically had to support their weight on the bottom by, you know, with some other, you know, protective material, and then have that weight to be supported on the bottom instead of like just solely relying on the silicone. Silicone is really just there to hold it upright, mm-hmm. right? Like to the glass. And then on top of that bottom layer, I'm able to, you know, start building like other structures on top of it and create that layer effect.
Right.
Yeah. Cause I just love how, you know, the slate stone, some of them, have a very cool layered texture, especially around the edges.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at first, when
slate is highly underrated as a stone to decorate with. I agree.
Yeah. So at first, when I started to, you know, do like experimenting with it, and in the progress of making that tank, mm-hmm. it did not look great. a lot of my friends like show pictures to my friends, and then they were like very doubtful.
Dude, what are you doing? Right,
you know, they're like, they gave me that looks like, really? I don't know. Until once it's all finished, they're like, oh, I see what you were trying to do.
Yep.
Like, you know, then it's the progress that made a lot of sense.
People doubt you. How long did it take you to make that to get to the point where you're like, okay, done, ready for fish? Like what was the scaping design and build process?
How long? Right from the start, right? Like the very beginning of the process. So the location of that tank. Okay, so I bought the house, right? That was a new house that I bought. And then at the time. And then immediately I saw that nook, right? Like it was meant to be
tanks
like
going
a,
there.
Like a bar, yep. right? And then I was like, yep, that's going to be the space. For fish tank. And then, nice. So I started working around it. And then what it was, like the base of it, at least before, was just a drywall that's like put up, you know, there's no support on the bottom. So I had to convert that, basically build the stand from 4x4s to support the weight. And then... Mm-hmm. close it up with drywall again, right? So
like, rebuild, you know, the wall basically
as a part of the house. And then on the other side of it, like, so there's two sides, right? There's like a, should we say, just like a living room side, and then there's a dining room side. So the dining room side have cabinets, so you can open to access the bottom, right? But then my wife was like, you know, I want to have a wine cooler there. I'm like,
where that I need to of all the places?
Like, I want to get a sump. Like, on. That's not gonna be big enough. And then she was like, you know, you're the designer. If you figure it out, I'm like,
pressure there.
Yeah, no pressure, like, there. All right, fine. Challenge accepted. Hold my beer.
Right.
So, I started designing around that, and then I knew the tank was going to be a wild discus tank, and I heard enough horror stories about fish discus keeping to make me aware that, so if I want to do a filtration system, it better be super easy to maintain, super easy access,
so you're gonna clean accessible, that constantly.
And also I'm going to try to automate the crap out of it, right? Yeah. So I was like, you know, canisters out of the question. Like, I have to do a sump. And then I usually couple a canister with the sump just so
I
have like a fail safe, right?
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. So the other half of the cabinet space underneath the tank was just reserved for, you know, like the canister and also like the different other plumbing.
So do you have the canister actually going while you're utilizing the sump? It's like, or is it on as a backup? Like, oh, you know, I just throw in some colonized biomedia, turn the thing on. And
yeah, it's really just biomedia, no physical media.
So it's on all the time?
It's on all the time, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. And then I'm using the Owaza.
Using the thermal one?
The thermal one, yeah. Which, with the built-in heater. That way, you know, if...
Such a good design.
Yeah, if like the sump is out of commission, I can still have, you know, life support essentially, right? For the tank. And then, so I figured I'm going to do the sump outside of my house, right? Mm-hmm. I plumb it to the outside. And then,
very reefer like of you. I like that.
Yeah, exactly. Where this tank is situated is like pretty close to the exterior wall. But then there's still some space. I had to figure it out. But then eventually got that figured out. You know, plumbed it. You know, the piping to the outside of the house. I built like a crate for the sump, right? And then that's like the best thing because it's the sump's outside. I don't care.
It's remote. If it's
I don't care. Yeah. Like water leaks out. Like it doesn't matter to me.
Exactly.
Right? It's outside.
And then, the pumps are out there, so you don't hear any noise from
exactly the like the tank. Like yeah, a lot of people don't realize how quiet the grotto is because it's
it must be super quiet,
silent.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It's completely silent, and then it's almost eerie.
then, if you want to hear noise, it's our comfortable thing. It's like okay, there's bubbles or something. I'm good.
Right.
But if you don't hear anything, you're like, oh crap, I gotta go check it out. Yeah.
Yeah, so I have the sump outside, and then I incorporated like a very, you know, very low tech, actually, automated water change system. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, so I don't do any manual water change at all. And then all I do is like every 2 weeks, I'll clean out the sponges pretty much, like the media, like the physical media. That's it.
Uh-huh.
And then the water changes, I basically timed it to do like a four. So there's four sessions daily. And then each session.
Of water changes.
Yeah. And each session is like about, I'm changing about 20 gallons or so.
Uh huh.
And then it's like on an RO system. So basically straight RO.
Yeah. I like that because it's not a big shocking water change for your discus, right? Was that for that reason or was it just because it made sense?
It's also the way I'm doing it because I'm just basically pumping out water from the sump. Like timed it.
Oh, you're doing it from the sump.
Okay. Kind of like timed it and measure it to like how many gallons.
So and your then pump's not drying out. Yeah.
Exactly. So it, like the water drops down to a like, you know, a very bare acceptable level for the pump, right?
Right.
And then the water change pump stops and the refill of RO kicks on. And then that's basically controlled by a sensor.
Like a float switch.
Like a solenoid, right? That basically, when the water level is reached, it will just shut it off.
Oof, that's so some next level shit. I like it.
Yeah, it's really actually not very
and simple.
Tech.
Yeah.
So yeah, I want to keep it simple so you know you don't fail as much. It's easy to get parts and whatnot, and it works. So
what kind of pump do you? What make, model, and size? Just out of curiosity, for a tank of that size.
I think right now I have a current USA pump. Like the DC pump, but then that one's actually not that powerful. So I used to have a lifeguard pump. That's that's not a DC pump, but then that's about like 4,000 some gallons per hour.
So you get like 10 turns an hour on that tank.
Yeah, I'm trying to get like 10 times turnover as close to 10 times as possible. But then you know there's a pretty long travel for the returner.
Right.
And then also
got to go up.
The return is a little high off the ground, so you lose a lot of head pressure that way. But then still, like it was creating a pretty strong current. And then a lot of people were, you know, concerned about the strong currents for discus.
Yeah,
but they're fine. They do in the rainy season. They face a lot of currents.
Yeah,
so I'm mad.
I think that's a good point too. I think that's overrated. I think some of the stuff you have to take into account operational practicality. I mean, adaptable. I mean, they got plucked from wherever they came from, put in a plastic bag, sent to a wholesaler, sent to a store, sent to another wholesaler, whatever, and then to you. Fish are adaptable, and a little bit of current's not going to kill them unless it's blasting right on them 24/7. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, you know who Oliver Lucanus is, right?
Lucanus? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
absolutely. I actually recorded a podcast with him just like 2 months ago, I want to say. And he has these footages of discus that are, you know, just chilling in very considerable amount of currents. Along the bank of the river, and they're not, you know, there are a lot of them are found in lakes and lagoons, but then they're everywhere. They're very widely distributed. So
isn't it amazing?
You know, you can find them in the river, you can find them in lagoon, and because they're mostly collect dry season. So
right when the water's still.
Yeah, when the water is low, and then of course a lot of them will get stuck in a lagoon. Sure. That's why you know, like whenever you see them being collected, it's like in a lagoon or in a lake.
Isn't it amazing
whatever.
How we generalize about that too with fish? Oh, they need this type of current or this type of light, or based on just a limited set of understanding. Categories differ. All discus can only come from still water. It's got to be, you know, dark and dingy or whatever, and it's not always true that way. So I love that you were just kind of like, no, I'm gonna look and make it work.
How many fish? How many discus do you have?
Sure, I mean, I think I have around 10.
Nice.
Yeah. So should we get back to the process of building the
yes,
rattle?
Yes, because I've taken you on a detour, as you know. I'm famous.
Yeah, no worries,
people. So. Get back on it.
So, yeah, so I built the sump, you know, that goes outside of the house. And then I started working on the tank itself, right? So I knew that I wanted the canister as well. But then at the same time, I don't want to see any equipment. So how do I do that? I basically had to drill additional holes outside of the overflow box to accommodate for, you know, like the inlets and outlets of the canister.
Right.
And then I use, like, you know, PVC pipe to basically route the current where I want the currents to go and everything. So that's why, like, there's a significant amount of substrate on the bottom to hide the, you know, the pipes that runs on along the bottom. And then I actually incorporated something in this tank that ultimately was a failure. I wanted to create that boiling sand effect in the springs that you see, right? Because, like, you know, like the sand's like kind of like boiling over it, like that was the coolest thing to me, right? So I wanted to do that, and then just through a lot of just different types of method and experimenting with it, like the sand I was using wasn't right because like I used too fine of a sand that you have bubbles rising up, like it would just carry the sand like everywhere. So I learned, okay, so if I want to create that effect next time, probably not going to use a really fine grain sand,
right?
And then also the bottom, like you need a very strong flow to create that effect.
Oh yeah.
So so only bubble rising up would probably not do it. I mean, like in the natural spring, it's like you got bubbles and you have a strong flow that comes out from the subterranean,
right?
You know, underground to over the sand, right? That's how it's created. Like it's created by flow of water. But then, so next time I'll probably do like a if I want to recreate that again or try to.
I think
to
you're the only person
again,
I've ever heard of that actually did that. That's actually tried to recreate that. I've never heard of anybody else playing with that idea.
I've actually, so there's another skater who told me his friend tried to do that. And then what he did was he used a, like, he directed a current, right, from a pipe that shoots downward onto the glass. And then that, you know, the reflected current around, like would stir up the sand around it that way, and then that created the effect. However, that flow, that current that directs towards the glass, eventually cracked the glass.
Oh God, that's
because you're thinking like, you know, like you're constantly nonstop abrasing the glass with sand. You're basically just like sending it the whole time. So I mean, like probably the tank wasn't that big or the glass wasn't that thick either. So it just took not too long and just cracked it. So I was like, oh, dang.
That's not good.
Yeah, I probably won't try that for a while.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't want to crack tanks, especially when you're in the business of putting tanks in other people's very expensive homes. You aren't going to do that. Yeah. So what's the smallest tank you currently have of your own in operation, or is this it? That's the smallest one you've got?
The smallest one is the 60 gallons. That's the Paludarium that I have.
Mm-hmm. Which is gorgeous too in its own right, by the way.
Oh, thank you, thank you.
Tell us a little bit about that one too, if you don't mind.
Yeah, so that one is actually a practice run for a client's tank. And, like I basically, you know, pitched the idea of having a huge plant wall, you know, behind the tank, essentially. And then that setup for the client is like I haven't done it yet because the client's, you know, traveling still. I'm waiting for him to get back to start the project. But then that project's going to be like a 200 gallons. And the tank is really cool. It's a bowl front, 200 gallons.
Oh,
but then that bowl front is a rimless bowl front. And also the front panel, instead of like having like the curved surface and then two straight surfaces for the sides and then the backside.
Right.
So they're like total four pieces still, right? Instead of that, custom made the front piece, the curved side out of just one glass, one single piece of glass.
That's
right.
That's
so
awesome.
The corner is like actually rounded, like continuous. And not like
right to the back
piece. Yeah.
How thick of glass are you using in that?
The glass is 3/4 inches.
Wow, that's amazing. Wow, you must have been very, very pleased to see that come out. Yeah,
heavy.
Must be super heavy.
Yeah, so that tank is like something that's gonna be like really cool, and frankly, like you don't see that, you just don't see it.
You never see one piece curved glass like that in an aquarium.
No,
very rarely.
Yeah, very rarely. And
maybe
then,
in a public aquarium usually, but not
right. But I mean, like even in public aquarium, they just resort to
because they can hide it.
You know
what I
mean?
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
And then there's gonna be like a big, you know, plant wall that's 6 feet by, I want to say 7 or 8 feet tall. It's gonna be great. Yeah, so the my little paludarium in my studio is a practice run for that, essentially.
Because how many gallons of water are in
for which one?
Yeah, you want at home, like out of the 65 gallon, like how many actual water volume gallons are in there?
Well, the tank total volume is about 60. So if you just take all the hardscape into consideration, then you're looking at like 45-ish, I want to say.
Okay. So good amount of water in there. What kind of livestock are you planning on keeping in that client's tank in terms of with that much space to work with?
The client's tank were like, I want to do like angels, like South American, basically, right? Like,
yeah.
I want to do some angels, and hopefully I can make, you know, tetras, like smaller size tetras work with angels. Mm-hmm. I'll probably have to use, you know, like small, really small angels to start the tank. And then,
yeah.
Like,
or laterally
let it grow
compressed
up
tetras.
With the tetras so they don't eat them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably my choice.
Very
of,
cool.
Of fish. Yeah.
Very cool.
And now, of course, cichlids.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Like dwarf cichlids, right? A piece of Brahmas, probably.
That's the other thing, too, I noticed in your, I'm jumping all over, but in the grotto, you have a variety of fish in there. It's not just the discus. What determines what you put with your fish? Is it like you're a fish guy and you're like, hey, I like that fish. These are fish I want to use. Or do you have that in mind as a whole thing when you start? You say, yeah, I'm going to have discus, but I'm also going to have plecos and knife fish. And I mean, what does it you have one star that's the main player and then everybody else is a supporting cast, or are you thinking of the whole thing as in like, oh, I'm going to try to design something for an entire population?
Yeah, I like setups that have a more well-rounded livestock, like that diversifies every level of the water, right? Yeah. So you got your surface fish, you got your midwater fish, you got like, you know, the bottom dwellers, and you know, and fish that goes like everywhere, right?
Right.
So
right.
The only premise that I had for the grotto, in terms of fish, is it's a South American tank. So
right.
I'm not gonna mix Central Americans. I'm not
right.
gonna mix, you know, like
no
not,
reservoir.
Nothing. Yeah. Nothing yeah. else. Yeah. That are from like other continent or whatever will go into that thing.
I love that you're holding yourself just loosely geographical. You're not sitting there like, oh, this just comes from the Rio Xingu and this one comes from the Orinoco, therefore they can't go in the same time.
Yeah, you're just enjoying
it. Yeah, exactly. Like, I agree.
Like it's for the artist's freedom.
Yeah,
to me, right? Like I have a license, a creative license, basically to do that. But then at the same time, you don't want to like create like a hodgepodge of
right. You got to restrain yourself, which is what you do well. Your designs exercise restraint. As an aquarist, switching gears a little bit now, as just a hobbyist, not the business guy. What do you think about like contests and what's going on in contests, the types of scapes that are being entered and winning, and how do you feel? Do you feel that contests drive the hobby in a good way, bad way, not at all?
It's and what influence they have? Way. It's definitely a good way.
What do you think
way.
They've done?
I absolutely
the
love
the everyday hobbyists.
I absolutely love the fact that there's a contest, and then so in such an organized fashion as well. And then the reason why is like, I love it. At the same time, I don't participate in it.
right. Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, you're busy.
Because I love it for the fact that, you know, it gives a lot of people real world opportunity, and it becomes something of a tool for them to make a living. So
yeah,
we don't think about that fact.
Good point.
Of things in
starts
the US
careers
because you know, like, you know, how many people are like, you know, depending on aquascaping as a form
right,
of living here. So we don't think about that. But then I overseas, you know why, you know, aquascaping is so hot in Indonesia? Because not only because, you know, they're resource rich,
right?
First of all, to start an aquarium, especially an aquascaping tank, right? You don't need like a big tank. So the barrier to entry is very low. And then you can actually make money from these contests if you win, there's prize money.
Right.
And then for them,
it's like a pro circuit.
Yeah, you know, like their living expense is so low, and then they don't have much to, like, you know, they don't need a huge amount of money to sustain their livelihood. You know, some of these contest money, like a couple thousand bucks to us, is like, all right, like, you know, it's nice to have, but then like I definitely can't afford rents on that.
For
but
them,
then,
that's,
to them
that's
it's
a lot
of money. And
yeah.
To them, like especially people who don't have the means to, you know, like get a white collar job or like, you know, living in the city, like it's a huge
evens the playing field. Yeah,
yeah, it's a huge way of, you know, liberating themselves, right?
Those are really great points that I don't think people discuss. I don't think I've ever heard anybody really mention it in that context before. And it does make a lot of sense. You know, the other thing too, it seems like a lot of these, I sometimes think some of these contest scapes are ridiculous, but just so out there. But I guess they're, in a way, you know, you ever go to like the LA Auto Show or whatever, and you see the like all the concept cars from like Ferrari and Lamborghini or whatever, and you're like, they look like the Batmobile. But the reality is those also trickle down to the everyday car.
Exactly.
So it's the same thing with these scapes, right? I mean,
those
techniques trickle down. Yeah,
exactly.
So I guess you can't completely trash it.
The fact that I don't like contests is that from like a very personal perspective, because I don't want other people to be giving my work a value, right? Like that, you know what I mean? Like, unless, well, yeah, like if you're my client, yeah, and then you pay,
well, that's a value, right?
Value that,
mean,
that, that,
an aesthetic judgment, right? But you mean an aesthetic judgment, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Right,
like, right. To me, like, well, my work, I don't want to pander to judges.
No, and but you know, you're a lot like, I think of it, aquarium designers like you are a lot like architects. Like, you, when you hire an architect to design your house, they have their own style, they have their own techniques. You're going to go to this guy or girl because you like the style of work that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same with you. People go, oh, Mark does really interesting work with wood and hardscape, and his tank systems are elegant and whatever. I like that. As opposed to somebody that says, oh, I want a pure nature aquarium design. And I'd find somebody else that specializes in that. Or I want a reef tank. I find a guy that does only reef tank. You know,
oh, trust me, I do it. I do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Like,
well, you would, right. Right. But right, right. But my point is, like, you have things that you like to do and you're good
yeah,
at.
Yeah,
and
absolutely. Come to yeah. You with if you that, give me like a blue sky project, then I'll definitely
you do it.
You know, go. Yeah, for
like, oh, hell yeah.
I'll do my heart out, but then,
yeah.
You know, like, it's not like I don't do other styles. Like, I definitely,
like, I'll never do that.
Yeah. Like, right. Except like any and all projects, that, you know, can pay my bill. But,
right.
To the context point, like, cause contest to me is like a very specific, part of the hobby. So you're not basically, it's very specialized. You're really, there's a strategy to contest tanks, and mm-hmm. there's a, you know, specific way of going about it. And then you're thinking, you like, you shouldn't be thinking about it from an artist's perspective, right?
Oh,
you're really thinking about it from the judging criteria.
What they want to see.
Yeah, and, exactly. Yeah. And then what they rate high. And then there's a very tactical and strategic way of doing it. And then, like, is there a place for me in the future to do that? Yes, I will probably try my hand in contest tanks as well. Like, I
right.
don't know how well I'll do because it's, you know, like, highly strategic, right?
Like, regimented and strategic. Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not like basically.
You're not as free spirited like you are.
It doesn't really give you the correct sense of like, okay, you're the best designer out there, or like, well, your work is the best work. No, it's basically opinions of the judges.
Well, okay, here's my question, and this has always been my criticism, a gentle criticism though, because I'm in awe of the talent of all these people, but there's a sameness that has creeped into a lot of these competition scapes. They all look very similar. And they have a style that keeps coming down. And it's because they're sort of, I don't want to say pandering, but because they're complying with these rules. Would it be more attractive to you in a contest if there was a little more freedom to just, hey, do a great scape? Doesn't have to follow specific guidelines about ratio and usage of materials or whatever. You know what I mean? Do you think that's the one maybe negative?
About that, and then I've talked to, you know, my friends about it. And it's just, to me, like, the format of the contest really kind of dictate what type of work that is going to be the winning work and like the trend right. of it, right? Because, okay, like ADA contest started, like IAPLC started what, like in the 80s, I want to say?
80s,
right?
Or 90s, yeah, I think so.
Like,
yeah,
like, of course you can only judge on a photograph because you didn't have
all they had.
Videos like, oh, like what, right. you're gonna send in like a like, you know,
35
a
millimeter
tape of
right
a,
right
a,
right
a video of your tank or something
right.
No, you can't do that. So that's what, like, what they're based their contest on is like a photograph, right? And
right.
and not even just like angled photograph,
so the style,
like, straight
was like
on
a static
yeah, yeah, so it's
like
very limited
style.
To
yeah.
that, like, that's why you have all these force perspective tanks, right? That mm-hmm. that don't buy
great,
you know, don't
point.
Get me wrong, they're great. I mean, like, they're,
no.
they're crazy, but then the thing is, like, yeah, like, if you have that tank in your house, are you just gonna really stay
in front of the tank
all the time,
right
like, yeah, and like as the one, like, you tilt your head a little bit, like, that
it's totally different
off,
right?
So,
well, that's the beauty of live contests too, like, this, we joke about the scape off thing that you're doing with Joey, but you're producing something that can be seen from multiple angles all the time. You know, that's different. And plus, you're designing tanks as an aquarium designer for sustainability, in terms of they have to work. They can't
right.
just be a
the
piece of art. It's got to be
too,
practical.
Right? And then also
yeah.
there's the interior design. Like, you don't want the tank to be just like a
at
hobbyist
odds.
Tank, right?
Yeah.
You want to, because like right now we have so many, you know, female hobbyists coming to the hobby, and then like a lot of them are, you know, wives, and they are decision makers of the house. And then if you say like, oh yeah, I want a hobby, you know, like I want to keep my fish in a tank that's bare bottom and like a ugly rim tank, like right here in our living room.
The science experiment.
Like, hell no, you're not. So, so to them, like they want something cohesive with their interior design, and then like they want something pleasant. So I think that's also something that, you know, we can take more into considerations. And then, so for example, like if I'm looking at a contest like AAPLC and all these, you know, slew of other contests that follow the same format, I'm like, dude, come on, do some updates, right? Like incorporate videos. Like how easy it is to upload a video of a thing now.
Right.
If you do that, if you do, okay,
totally
like you're judging on the flow of the tank, you're judging on like well-roundedness of the tank. You're judging on like the whole, like zoom
out. You can't
out,
evaluate
right?
it from
zoom
one
out.
Angle.
Like,
right,
let's see
right.
the entirety of the tank. Like, what is it sitting on? How are you housing your equipment? What's above the water, right? Like now, if you any layout with the, let's say some hardscape perching out of the water, and you have like plants incorporated on above water surface, guess what? It's not judged. And you just wasted your time, like, you know, doing that for if you're only doing the tank for contest, right?
So you kind of have to pander to the judges.
You pull back a little bit, and then you see the whole thing of the tank. Then guess what? The style of tanks are gonna change, and more crazy design or more, you know, like a variety of design aspect just will show up. I guarantee you. And then
truly unique.
And I even want to do, you know, like start a contest like that, like with
it makes
whatever
sense.
Other criteria.
That's always kind of been my knock at contests, is they encourage, and you explained it better than I could have ever, and with great insight, they cater to one type of judging criteria. And it's like, what about multiple criteria? What about different criteria? And that would be the unique thing about a different type of a contest. You know, almost any type of aquarium could be entered. And the other thing we're seeing a lot of, I noticed on internet, you probably noticed this too, I see it a lot. People are taking pictures of their tank in the room. They're not just taking a picture of the tank anymore. It's like you see the hardwood floor, you see the potted plants around it, you see the windows and the, you know what I mean? That people are looking at how it incorporates into the living space. And I think that's really neat too.
Yeah, I mean, because I do this for a living. So
that's what you do.
Like, I need to really take that into consideration. Like my clients, especially like the high-end ones, like they they don't want just like a tank,
right?
Most of the time, they don't even want a standalone tank. They want like a built-in tank, right? Mm-hmm. That's like a very highly custom-made just for that space.
Right.
And it needs to be a part of, you know, their home, like seamlessly.
Right.
So, So I think a lot of times, like, you know, our hobby gets a stigma that's like, sometimes it gets like it's like when you talk about a fish tank and people have that perception of, oh yeah, like it's just an
aquarium on a stand,
somehow cheap, right? Somehow
plugs
cheap, and somehow
out.
like they think about like, I don't know, like Asian supermarket with like the food,
big arowana, right.
Like, they have that negative perception, but then
I'm like, dude,
that it could be
totally more than that.
A beautiful piece of furniture inside your home as well.
So what are some takeaways? Like, okay, so your tips, if you will, like for, you know, I'm Joe hobbyist and I'm like, oh, Mark does awesome tanks. What are some, like, maybe if you have two or three real top tips for people that want to do their own tank, kind of inspired by like work that you and other professionals do, what are some things that they should take away from your work that you would like them to take away from your work when they, you know, create their own aquariums in their homes?
First of all, just don't have the idea of like, okay, I'm going to create something that's going to impress other people. Like, just lose that. Like, the whole point of having an aquarium is to enjoy for self-enjoyment. And
love it.
Just like, you got to have fun with it. And then you want
to
do something you want, right? And
do you think social media has pushed that? do you think social media has made people do that? Like pander to what everybody wants to see, trying to stand out from the clutter?
It depends on what you're trying to do with your social media, I guess. Yeah. Like, for example, yeah. I you know, see myself as a content creator and influencer now. So, yeah, like some of that, you know, like I would think about, oh, like would people, you know, like it or not? But then I'm so used to doing
it. It's still your work. Yeah.
Anyway, so that's not like a whole lot of, you know, influence on why design and whatnot. But then, yeah, if like, let's say you're trying to get views and then you're doing this thing just to get views. Yeah, then there's definitely some ways and strategies of doing the thing where you can get views and stuff. But then if I'm just recommending, you know, or like giving tips to hobbyists who are like trying to elevate their aquarium keeping.
Yeah.
And I would say still the first rule is to have fun. Like just don't think about what other people would think.
Brilliant. Yes.
Want to do like, yeah, just do you and and don't be afraid to try things and experiment with things. Cause I've tried a whole bunch of things. And then, well, one thing about me is I'm a huge procrastinator. Yeah. Like I would. If I have something that I don't understand or one part of it that I just like, it's so outside of my understanding that I couldn't like mentally picturing how it will work, then I'll just put it off. I'll just
right till it comes.
Right.
Yeah.
So which is not a good thing, I guess, but also it had helped me from just endless amount of heartache and failures, because you know when I don't just go try something blind.
You think through things. Yeah
I have to kind of like figure it out, okay, or I think this will work, and then when I get to that point where I have a way and then I have a method in my head and then I'm like, I think it will work, guess what, like 80% of the time it will work.
It will work.
Yeah, so like I and then like, you know, I it's a calculated risk, so I don't end up, you know, hurting myself or like get burned out or whatever from the failure. Right. So, you know, you don't want to like, definitely shouldn't be afraid of failures or like experimenting with things, but do it in a calculated way.
Yeah.
So you don't, you know, like have catastrophic failures that break your bank or whatever.
Right.
That would be the second thing. And then the third thing would be just study, like, I mean, just look at stuff. Look at a lot of stuff. Look at other people's tanks. Look at, you know, nature. Look at whatever that could be even, you know, remotely related to fish tank. I look at like interior design a lot.
Right.
Materials. I look at like even architecture sometimes. Mm-hmm. Nature is definitely a huge draw. So when I, you know, shared with you about my perspective on biotope, how like, you know,
yes,
very small dissection of the whole thing.
Yeah.
So I realized that when I was out in nature, because I was, you know, trying to collect all the hardscape materials for the river. And then I was, you know, in the mountains and then on the riverbed. And I was trying to pick out like different stones, right? And see like which one is nice and whatnot. But then on a riverbed, usually you just have riverbed rocks. Like
right.
And then there's not a whole lot of, you know, really a stone with a lot of characteristics and stuff. So I'm like, why is that? Like, because when I look at, like, when I look up and then when I look out into the nature, like, it's just incredible.
Well, it doesn't take into account the action of water erosion and the way water pattern, you know, water flow patterns.
Right. My point is, you know, like when I look down in one spot, right?
It's
not that pretty.
But right.
Like looked up and looked at the whole picture, it's pretty again.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, all right, okay, so that makes sense. Cause you
just know, don't focus too much.
Right. When you look at that little section, it's not that pretty. So
that's cool.
When you're out there a lot, like in nature, and then you just kind of like being there, being in the middle of it, and then really, you know, doing some thinking on your own, then you realize a lot of stuff, and which you can incorporate into your design.
Yeah. Now, another question for you, actually a two-part question, but the first part of it, what is there a tank, a fish, an idea, a concept that you want to try in the near future? Or like, oh, for my next personal tank, or I'm going to push a client in this direction. Is there, concept you want to do? Yeah.
What's the second part of it?
Okay. The second part is where do you see the hobby just in general in say 5 years in terms of what we're doing?
Great question.
Tank design wise. So let's hear your perspective on both.
Okay, so first one, I'm glad you brought it up because I'm actually working on something. So remember the river I told you about, the 450?
Yeah.
So that one has been empty for a while now. And then I'm actually trying to do another tank, or like just set it up again before Joey's visit in October.
Mm-hmm.
And for this setup, I'm going to do a North American native scape.
Oh, cool.
So it's going to be a stream tank, and then I'm going to have shiners, darters, mm-hmm. you know, chubs. And,
right.
It's just going to be a tank that's like a scaped tank. Obviously, I'm not going to go like strictly mimicking the stream.
It's inspired by.
Yeah, it's inspired by. And then I'm going to incorporate a lot of that elements, but then also I'm going to do, you know, like aesthetically pleasing elements, like incorporating some plants, and you know, I could use Java fern, I could use plants that are like that might not have anything to do with North America,
but they represent
yeah, it's just month. It gives you the sense that like it's not just a aquarium, but then it belongs in nature,
right
like when you look at it, and then it's just pleasing to look at. So that's what I'm doing right now.
That's going to be super cool. I'm looking forward to seeing that. Cool. That'll be a new, totally awesome. Different look for you. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know, you don't really appreciate the Native American species until
you see them in context.
Until you see them, right? Like, for example, the tangerine darter, which is for the listeners that might not be familiar with them, they mm-hmm. are almost like a loach. Like, but that one's pretty sizable. It's like, what, like, six to 8 inches.
That's a big darter. Yeah,
it's a big darter. Yeah, it's the biggest darter actually. And then it's the body.
Do they do well in aquariums?
I have no idea. Like, I know very little about our native fish, unfortunately.
Yeah, isn't that sad? Most of us don't.
Right.
a lot of native fish guys.
Yeah, and I'm actually collaborating with the fish conservation and fishery.
Mm-hmm.
So they're also on social media, and they're a great organization that's trying to breed, or they're not trying, but they're actually breeding these native fish and releasing them back to the wild, right?
Super cool.
In Tennessee. So I'm actually collaborating with them and finding out, you know, a lot of information on the husbandry, and just like using them as a resource to see if I can even get these fish, and like how to correctly set up the stream tank and everything.
Right. Flow.
Yeah.
Environment. Yeah, are you so, gonna need a chiller? I don't know why I'm asking that, but
I'm probably not gonna do a chiller just because the temperature drops down to what, like low 40s.
Yeah.
No, low 40s here, like in the wintertime.
Oh, right. But in the room, it's gonna be like, yeah. Yeah.
Right, so obviously the in room temperature is not gonna be that low, but then I'm thinking I'm gonna do a sump outside of
house. There you go.
Right. So I don't even for that one, I don't even have to insulate it.
Yeah, that's great. No,
yeah,
that's,
so
that's cool.
It would just adapt to. I don't need a heater.
That's a beautiful one.
It would just
one savings
adapt.
Right there. One less
exactly. So the temperature of the tank will just adapt to the outside temperature. So I think it will work out. You know, the seasonal swing and everything.
Yeah, because they're used to it. The fish are actually used to a seasonal drop in temperature. That makes sense.
Yeah, so that's something that I'm actually working on. But
very
then,
very cool.
There's another concept that I want to really do is I think eventually I'll get to do it. Like I, I'm I believe there will be a client that's crazy enough for me to take on to do this project on. So I'm envisioning, like, you know how you never see a monster fish tank with small fish that are swimming around, right?
Right, just a big. You mean
just get eaten?
You mean a big tank with little fish?
Yeah, with the.
Oh, no, love you for this.
Not even that. It's like a huge tank with both monster fish and small fish coexisting in one view. You just don't see it because you can't set it up that way, right? Because, you know, the monster fish will just eat the small fish.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm constantly just dreaming up a way to have a setup where I can allow the two essentially different habitat to coexist in one display. And then the way I'm envisioning on doing is, so let's say you have a huge tank that's, I don't know, like 20,000 gallons, let's say.
Right.
Right. Like a huge, huge one. Like that can house Arapaima and whatnot.
Right. Like public aquarium size. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So imagine like the viewing panel to be what, like 5 foot tall, 20 foot long.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you have all the space for the monster, like, you know, giant fish to swim around in.
Right.
But then right up against the glass, right, like in the very front, maybe I can build a shelf, like a quote-unquote shelf, right? That's almost like you're doing a smaller aquarium on near the surface. So like the viewing panel is 5 foot deep, right? Mm-hmm. But then let's say on the left side, leftmost side of the tank, you have all of a sudden you have a shelf that's almost pressed right up to the glass, that's like 2 feet below the water surface.
Uh-huh.
Or like maybe like, you know, 20 inches, let's say, below the water surface, right? And then you build on that shelf like a really dense and well protected and big enough of a aquascape.
Oh, that's a cool aquascape within
a
scape.
Yeah, you're basically incorporating like a shallow area of the riverbank.
I see what you're saying. Right, like the shoreline area.
Yeah, so okay. That part, yeah. Like no,
that's entirely
obviously
consistent
you
with
build
nature.
It like into like a very sturdy structure where it's basically an area where that's inaccessible to
the big fish can't get there. Yeah,
right. That's big fish just super can't cool. Get up, and then at the same time, you know, you can observe all these small fish that are, you know, they probably learn over time to not venture out the open.
That's exactly what I mean. I knew you were a fan of Ivan Mikulji, and like if you read some of his stuff, he'll talk about how like he did one observation of those the little guppies, what he called guppies, but they're the wild.
Sure.
They're the Campana guppy or whatever, and he's like, they never venture out more than 3 meters from shore. And it's just, then you see this, he took a picture, a beautiful picture of them in the very shallow water, and then it drops off into the background and dark. That's exactly what you're saying, is you're creating a refugium of sorts, an environment for these fishes that mimics what they do in nature,
which is
stay away from the big boys, and you're able to incorporate the whole thing.
Yeah, I think it's
super cool idea.
Completely
love it.
Doable. And totally then, doable. Then, I mean, obviously, it would be most likely a public
big ass project,
not like a private resident display.
No,
if you got listeners, hey, if you're a listener and you're a public aquarium, you know,
we do have a few.
Whatever, like,
hit me up,
reach me to do the project. I want to do it.
Exactly, let's get some creative juices.
Let's do it. Shed Aquarium.
The Shed's a customer, so you know what, they sometimes listen in some of their chorus, so that would be good.
To answer your second part of
the
question, so
and I was going to do an amendment by part one, actually, but go to your part two. Yeah, where do you see in 5 years? But
oh wait, did you have
my amended question was like, and what would you like to see other hobbyists trying, what type of tank display or whatever, you know, similar to what I asked you. What do you think would be cool to see some other hobbyists try on a smaller level? Obviously, something that doesn't have to be commercially viable, you know, or, you know, but what do you think would be neat?
I would like to see more incorporation of plants, like above water plants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, creating the whole environment.
Yeah, right? I mean, like, fish is, the aquatic environment is just like one corner of one piece of nature, right? Right?
And just then, like on the shoreline.
Yeah, you want to incorporate more elements, like so you can have a more holistic.
Yeah, that's why I'm so fascinated by flooded forests and transitional habitats. Now, granted, you'd have to operate the aquarium to do that, drain it,
right?
Whatever. But what you're saying is incorporating maybe a shoreline or whatever, or, you know, speaking of Joey, that one tank that he does have, and he uses those, I think he uses the artificial ones, the one he calls it a flooded forest, right?
Yeah.
And that's a cool idea where he has like the tree trunks. I mean, I love that concept of a flooded, mimicking in the flooded forest. And then maybe even incorporating a shoreline like you're talking about. That's a cool idea that a home hobbyist can do.
Yeah, I mean, and just think about fish a little bit more. I mean, like, there are tons of hobbyists who are only into fish and they don't even care about the, you know, environment, whatever. So to them, I want to see more incorporation of like hardscape and, you know, like the environment build. Like, I just
stop the bear tanks.
my own, I guess, perspective, just I hate bare bottom tanks. Like, I just can't stand them. So
yeah, no, I
that's me. That's me. Like, you know, there's those aquarists usually are the ones who really take good care of their fish. Right. Well, like, they keep their fish like in the tip top condition.
Well, the focus is entirely on the fish.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
you're more holistic.
You know, you can definitely do it that way. It's just like, you know, throw some sand in there. It's not that like a big deal. Like, you can still siphon it out.
Right.
But then it adds a little natural elements to it. So
exactly. Yeah. So okay, so now to part two. I'm sorry, I derailed you a little bit there, but I wanted to get your thought on
it. No worries. I see the hobby going in the direction of like what I mentioned before, that we have like a flood of female hobbyists coming in, and then they are not as hardcore on fish themselves. Like, I'm generalizing, obviously.
Right.
But they care more about the home decor in overall, right? Like, so they want probably to see aquarium to be a nice feature of their home.
Like an extension of the home.
So. Yeah, like more or less a finisher instead of just like a tank. Right.
Got it.
And then, again, generalization.
Right. Of course.
Girls generally care more about that than guys, but there are definitely guys like me who care about that stuff too.
Right.
So,
right.
I think that would be the direction that the hobby will
incorporate the hobby more.
Yeah. To our homes. Right. Yeah. Right. Because you see that happening with PetSmart too. Like, you know,
yeah, they're
the collaboration with the interior designer to, you know, basically make their cabinets and stands a little bit fancier,
which the aquarium hobby needed to do the industry needed to do that many years ago. Make things more consistent with people's home decor. I agree.
Yeah,
as the choices have been limited.
Yeah, I think they're doing more of that in Asia and perhaps in Europe too, but then,
you see a lot of that in Europe. Yeah,
in America, it's still we're always a little behind on the hobby. Except for the reef side.
Yeah, isn't that weird? I was gonna say, except for the reef side, Europe follows us. And for a while, we were behind, and now it's like, no, U.S. leads the way. But you're 100% right that the aesthetic thing in the overall environment, I think that's really important. And maybe the pandemic is what put the focus back on that again, when people were setting up tanks, you know, and now they're going, yeah, it's part of my home. It's not just a tank. And I love that you're thinking along those lines. That's super cool. Now, obviously, we're getting near our time, because I know you have for another 10 minutes, 7 minutes or so, but I wanted to get some other thoughts on things that are really just sort of I don't want to say a lightning round, but just some quick thoughts from you on things that you feel are kind of important for hobbyists to know. Like, what would you, if you had one rule that you feel an aquarium design should follow, is there a particular rule of great importance that you think everybody should, we'd be all happier with our tanks if we followed this one rule? And I don't mean, you know, I know we talked about that, but I mean, in terms of tech practical thing, like to do with your aquarium. from a design or maintenance standpoint or whatever?
Yeah, I think if there is one, then just really think about the maintenance aspect of your tank, right? So a lot of times we don't think about it, but then that usually is a direct cause for sustainable, like how sustainable it is.
Right. You can't maintain it. You're not gonna want
to. Yeah. If you can like don't want to maintain it, or like just it's too hard and you make it too complicated, then you're gonna you're setting yourself up for failure basically. Yep. And then so really think about it. For example, the type of equipment that you're using, and then mm-hmm. do you want like an easier way to drain the tank so you don't have to like drag a big long hose. Whatever, like, you know, sometimes it might be a little bit more difficult to set it up initially, but then in the long run, you know, you're gonna have very like an easy time to
That's so important. And I know coming from the reef background, a lot of reefers don't think that through. They want all the gear, this and that, and they don't think about how access is so important, being able to actually work in your tank. And I know a lot of guys that set up these huge aquariums, you know, 600, 700 gallon aquariums. And they're like, oh, yeah, it's a pain in the ass to work in. I hate, you know, going to the back. If something falls off a rock, I'll never get it. I'm thinking, well, you know, you didn't design your tank properly.
Exactly. You just didn't think it through.
Yeah. If you have the resources to do something ambitious like that, you should think through all aspects of it. So you're basically saying give some thought to actually living with your aquarium, which is super important.
Yeah, and if you can, you know, reduce the amount of equipment inside the tank.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, we have glass lily pipes and everything. So, like, you know, try to be less obtrusive. But then,
yeah,
there are ways that you can eliminate the equipment, like, altogether. It's just you got to, you know.
Got to get creative.
And use a little bit more elbow grease.
I think that's something that we could probably even do a whole podcast on. I think I may have to have you back if you want.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Time.
And you know what we should do is really talk about the nuts and bolts of tank design. Maybe what we'll do is we'll get some questions from people. Okay. I'll solicit them ahead of time and be like, what's a tank problem you're trying to solve? You're trying to design a tank for whatever.
Mm.
Let's lay it on Mark and see if he has some ideas. Would you be willing to do something like that? That would be
good. Yeah, absolutely. Cool.
That would be fun because I think people would get a real kick out of that, being able to hear it from someone that works on this stuff every day. And you probably have a lot of really great workaround ideas for that. And I think that's important because a lot of our audience is very ambitious people that want to try new things, new approaches.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's your audience is very
progressive. Yeah. But they don't always know how to execute it equipment and practicality wise. You know, I can tell them about the biology all day and this and that. But it's like, they're like, well, how do I make this work? And some of these things are tough. You know, we get a lot of questions. One thing I'd like to talk to you about in the future, I don't know if you've had experience with it, is brackish water aquariums and intertidal aquariums. But I'll bet you have some ways to make some of these things work from a design standpoint. And I think that would be a lot of fun.
Cool.
To talk about. We can do really well with that.
Yeah, well, man, for sure.
Again, we're kind of near the end of our 90 minutes I held you to. We could have talked all day.
Oh, absolutely.
I could have heard you talk all day. I think we're definitely going to have you back because I think people are going to be really stoked to hear this stuff. Mark, again, the best way to follow you is right now. Well, you have your website. Your website is naturedesignstudio.com, yep. Right?
And then naturedesign.studio.
Oh, okay. I just Googled it. So yeah, it shows how good I am with URLs. And then your Instagram presence, obviously.
Instagram is probably the best place to follow, just because I update it daily.
Yeah.
And I try to interact with people as much as I can.
I love that.
And
too.
You know, there's also TikTok.
TikTok.
That's your preferred poison. And then
no, that's good to know. I didn't know you were on TikTok. We'll have to check that out. Okay, that's cool.
And also Facebook.
All the media, all the usual stuff. Yeah, that's great.
But I do want to, before we go, do want to mention this. So I actually started a nonprofit organization.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, it's called Rivers and Lakes Initiative. We're focusing on the education and conservation of freshwater specifically. Environments, let's say, specifically. Yeah. And then I aim to, you know, like, give funding to help schools to install, like, aquariums and nature setups on the campus.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, to get kids intrigued and curious about nature from an early age. And then second part of things will be I want to arrange like expeditions and help frontline, you know, researchers and conservationists who are like in the rainforest doing the work, whatever. And then
very cool.
As well as arranging expeditions for influencers and content creators, like myself included, right?
Yeah,
to go out there and then document and then just plaster whatever like the work that, you know, these awesome people are doing. And the nature just plaster that like all over the internet to make a
super cool,
you know, very, very profound impact.
You know what you have to do when you get a chance, like send me a link on Instagram or whatever, and I'll post that on our Instagram feed and maybe put it on our website where people can find out more, and perhaps if they're interested in,
yeah, for sure. I bought the domain the other
sweet.
Day, so
we have a very focused audience that's really into that kind of stuff. We've supported you know Project Diaba and Freshwater Life Project, which I know you have done some work with. So I think it would be really cool to help you out with that. That'd be a lot of fun. Well, yeah, Mark.
Yep.
All right. I thought I lost you. I'm like, yeah, oh, really? At 90 minutes, I lost you. I just want to again thank you so much for taking time out of your day. I know you got a lot of stuff going on, and I'm glad we were able to connect. And when we air this, I think there are going to be a lot of positive comments and a lot of questions. So we'll definitely have you on again.
Thanks so much, Scott. Yeah, this has been an absolute pleasure. Like, you definitely asked, like, you know, a lot of profound questions that
thank you.
I really love to share my opinion on. And
yeah. I hope I didn't take you too off course, because I tend to do that.
No,
but
absolutely.
But I think you have a lot to say and a lot of interesting stuff in it. And it again, it's so appreciated. Thanks again.
Yeah, for sure.
Right,
thank you.
All right, everybody. Well, thank you again for listening to us. And my name is Scott Feldman. You're listening to Mark Chen, guest on The Tent. We hope to see you soon on the next installment of The Tent. Thanks. Bye, Mark.
Bye.